Welcome back to another episode of Tales of the Lesser Medium. If you missed the first two episodes, you better go back and get caught up. Why are you listening to this one? You probably need to listen to the first two, or you don't. This is still going to be funny. These podcasts are full of spoilers, so you've been warned. I'm Caleb J. Ross, joined by my co-host, Travis Terry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back.
And our first series of this podcast will chronicle and poke plenty of fun at the main entries of the Resident Evil franchise that take place in the Arklay Mountains.
Yes, that's right. And we know there is more than just Resident Evil 1, 2, 3, and Resident Evil 0, but there is a nice clear separation between those games and the ones that follow. So we're going to do these as a four-part series, take a break, and then come back for more Resident Evil. Sometimes you need a break from the macabre.
Resident Evil 3 is part Resident Evil 2 prequel and part Resident Evil 2 sequel. A prequel is what they say in the business.
Yeah, it's, is that right?
It rolls right off of the inflamed, swollen tongue. That's the prequel. It's very confusing, but we're here to help you make sense of the story. And as we do, we will be interrupting the flow of it from time to time to interject our horseshit attempts at humor. Or if you think horseshit is already funny, just our humor, I suppose.
There you go.
Either way, it's going to be confusing, I promise. Speaking of confusion, in our last episode, we incorrectly called Sherry Birkin, the scared and ever skittering little girl, by the wrong name. We called her Shirley a few times. So please accept our apologies, you fake little girl, while you're still alive enough to be tempting zombie food. And we also incorrectly named the pilot that was hilariously accidentally shot and even more hilariously crashed his chopper into the precinct. We called him Brad Chickenheart Vickers, but thankfully we caught it partway through. That's important to know for sure, as you'll come to find out here soon.
Very soon, in fact. It's important that we correct that. We corrected it then, in the moment, sort of, later in the episode. But it's important that you know for sure that as of the beginning of this episode, he's still very much alive. Yeah, and the guy that died had no name.
Now we begin our tale of Resident Evil 3, Nemesis.
All right.
After the mansion incident from Resident Evil 2, Chris Redfield, you may recall, took off to Europe to continue his investigation into Umbrella. Barry, hailing from Canada, apparently, took a trip to relocate his family before catching up with Chris overseas, and Jill stuck around in Raccoon City to investigate the raccoon chief, Brian Irons. And it was around this time that the horseshit hit the proverbial humorous fan. So now, as Resident Evil 3 begins, it's late September of 1998. Just 2 months since the events of the mansion took place, Umbrella has stormed the lab of William Birkin, causing some T-virus to leak into the sewers to be consumed by rats. You remember Trav made that quip about Master Splinter and the Ninja Turtles? So memorable, that line was. After hitting the sewers and rats, the virus made its way into the water supply. And soon after that, and prior to the events of our last episode, hundreds of zombies were roaming the streets. Raccoon City was being overwhelmed with casualties and overrun with the undead.
Turtle power! What were you up to in September of 1998, by the way?
Humming that song, wondering why Raphael was rude and crude, and why Donatello does machines. All of those things. How about you?
Wow, in 98, yeah. By 98, I'd moved on well past the Turtles, and I was 13 years old and well in to playing with myself.
Oh, no, I did that too. I was just with Turtles.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, no, dude, totally, I'm cool. I definitely was playing myself. No, dude. God. In our last episode, we talked about how the Raccoon City police fought off the zombie invasion as best they could, but were sabotaged by their own police chief and Raccoon King, Brian Irons. He had limited the police force's ability to call for backup and even secretly killed some of his own men as he descended further into madness. His actions made the standoff against the zombies on September 27th a futile disaster. Over the next 2 days, the remaining police and civilians holed up in the police department were overrun and either killed or converted to zombies one by one. Hardly anyone survived. As we move into the game's intro cutscene, Umbrella choppers fly in, carrying their own armed militants, but even they become victims as well.
Ooh.
By the morning of September 28th, the city is almost completely wiped of anything or anyone with a moral conscience beyond brains equals food. But, you know, we give zombies a lot of crap, okay? A little aside here, but I did the research, And eating human bodies, while not the most calorically dense option available in most circumstances, is nutritionally valid. However, to bring these zombies back down a few pegs on that pedestal that I just put them upon, of all the body parts, the brain is actually one of the worst choices. Eating the brain can lead to a neurodegenerative condition called Kuru, which is 100% lethal.
Really?
So, yeah. Kuru. Although 100% delicious as well. On that September 28th morning, zombies fill the streets and alleyways, monsters lurk in the shadows, and the military has set up a quarantine perimeter around the city with the hopes that the virus will die out there and never spread. But there was someone still in the city who needed out. Jill Valentine is back. Happy Valentine's Day, motherfuckers.
Cut, cut.
What? I thought that sounded good.
Well, you thought a dumb thought. Jill, is it Jill?
It's Jill, yeah.
Oh, okay. We all have depressing moments of weakness. Don't feel bad. Just try something else. Something more. I need something more whimsical.
Okay. Time for Jill Valentine to break some hearts. Is that good?
I mean, not bad. Well, actually, very bad. Aww. I like the holiday puns, okay, though. Give me another.
Yeah, okay. Do you feel like getting lucky, punk? Go ahead, make my Valentine Day. Because they holiday. Yeah, you know, like Clint Eastwood says from those movies, but because Valentine's Day is about sex and, you know.
Okay, okay. That's so bad I feel like you're saying anything that pops in your head in an attempt to solicit camaraderie and friendship.
Aw.
Listen, save that for your therapist. We've got a movie to make. Try giving me something for the fans.
Okay. The chef has arrived. Time to make a Jill sandwich. And then I'll say motherfucker at the end of that.
How are you so bad at this?
Aw. That director's mean. Okay. So Raccoon City is on fire. Cars are parked haphazardly, obstructing the roads and alleyways. Zombies stagger menacingly from every corner. Boom! Jill explodes her way out of an apartment building and makes her way through the chaos, almost aimlessly, armed with a large assault rifle. A group of zombies corners her. She barges through a warehouse door to escape.
She kind of left that apartment building like the way I remember my dad would sort of drunkenly exit the bathroom after a night of heavy drinking, just armed, dangerous, and aimless. And I don't know if she was in her underwear or not, but he was usually in his underwear.
Man, I'd play that game.
Yeah.
I mean, if only to make you relive those horrible memories. It makes me feel good when you do that.
Are you saying you would play Resident Evil with Jill in her underwear or a game of my dad being drunk in my house and raising me in his underwear?
Yes. Yes, I would. In the warehouse, Jill runs into a large and very nervous man. She insists that they leave, but he's not excited about that idea. He just lost his daughter to the zombie horde. Jill tells him there will be no rescue attempt, urging him to leave, but the man is scared. He says he'd rather die there of starvation than be attacked by the monsters. He then runs and locks himself in a truck trailer that was backed into the warehouse.
On this episode of Yo Raccoon City Cribs, this guy lives in a truck trailer. Okay, pal, show us around.
Yeah, so this is my bed. It's just a pile of clothes. I've stripped off all the dead bodies around here.
Nice!
Yeah, and here's my kitchen. Right now, it's just one can of beans, but I'm looking to add some more soon.
Wow, beads! Oh, and what's this here? Looks like a pile of stiff paper towels and cutouts of women from, what is this here, Martha Stewart Living?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, sir.
Is this area over here where you crank it?
That is exactly where I crank it. Oh, man. Jill leaves the warehouse alone. She weaves down a number of alleys and narrow passageways, picking off zombies as needed. Between the pings of her own gunfire, Jill hears other shots ring out. She runs toward their origin, hoping to make contact with another survivor. She comes to the end of an alley and enters a door, which happens to be a wine bar. Hopes of safety quickly vanish as she immediately witnesses a zombie bite a man in the neck. He and Jill kill the zombie. Jill approaches him, recognizing him as Brad Chickenheart Vickers.
Brad, OMG, what are you doing here? I thought you were somewhere far away on the fucking helicopter you abandoned us with.
Hey, I dropped you a rocket launcher to defeat Tyrant.
You dropped it because your hands were caked in Vaseline, Bradley, and I think you know that. You don't get credit for that. And wow, yeah, that zombie really bit you, didn't he?
I do not feel good. I've got some pretty painful abrasions. You don't happen to have any of that rocket launcher Vaseline still on you, do you?
No.
How do you not have any more? There was like a whole lot of Vaseline on that thing.
They're discussing the chaos in the city when Brad suddenly... I just see Brad, like, I love that Brad so quickly turned it around on her. Like, he's obviously in the wrong here. And he's like, what? Sorry. That just tickles me. Okay. They're discussing the chaos in the city when Brad suddenly says, oh, maybe you should take this. When Brad suddenly says,
he's coming for us. We're both going to die.
Jill is confused, but Brad goes on.
He's after STARS members. There's no escape.
Before Jill can get clarification, Brad leaves. She follows after him, but he's gone before she can catch up. She's back outside in a narrow passageway crowded with zombies and fights her way through by exploding barrels that catch several zombies on fire at once. Later, she's attacked by dogs, much like the one that Brad left her with to be killed by 2 months earlier.
Take care of Snuffles and Max and Swampy for me, Jill. Okay? Goodbye.
Eventually, Jill rushes up to the front of the Raccoon Police Department. But from behind her, she hears Brad call her name. She looks back. He's visibly wounded. He's staggering. Suddenly, a giant humanoid creature drops between them, facing Brad, and marches toward him. Its face appears to be partly sewn on, without lips, only exposed teeth. A large black trench coat drapes over the grotesque beast. Brad attempts to flee. The beast, who looks a little like Mr. X from Resident Evil 2, lifts Brad by his neck, places his other hand over Brad's face, and shoves a spiky tentacle through his head before tossing him aside. Now Brad is dead, for like, for real this time.
Ha ha! Suck it, Brad, you dead bastard. You're still officially and canonically dead this time.
For sure.
We promise.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, though, what his epitaph would read.
Well, I've put some thought into this, Travis. Lucky you. Here lies Brad Vickers. May his chicken heart, his pheasant scrotum, his turkey liver, and his eagle knee feed the soon-to-be-mutated worms that will someday set up shop in the Resident Evil 14 mansion of our future. Amen.
God, I can only hope. I only hope.
Give me one.
I kind of like ones that rhyme. I was kind of thinking something simple like, here lies Brad. His piloting was bad. We'll sure miss Vickers, who was impaled in the Dickers. I know it was his head, but I mean, people that read the epitaph don't have to know that. They weren't there.
Yeah, I mean, the people who read the epitaph are not going to, they're going to care more about apparently the person who wrote the epitaph here. Like, if that's the family member, like, oh, Brad, let's see, which one was that? Which son was that? I don't really remember, so I'll just, here's one more. Here lies Brad Vickers. May the helicopter that ushers him into heaven be flown by a more competent pilot than he. Amen.
We'll soon find there are not many competent helicopter pilots in this universe.
Maybe there's not very many competent helicopter mechanics. Huh? Maybe that's it. Maybe the pilots are great, you know?
That's a really good point, actually. Yeah,
I know it is. The crazy-faced creature then turns his attention to Jill, who looks to be in shock. The creature takes a swing at her, but she dodges and runs into the precinct, locking the door behind her. The vile assassin can be heard uttering, "STARS!" Once Jill is safely inside, the creature, we'll now refer to as Nemesis from here on, fruitlessly bangs on the door, unable to breach the lock. Which, as a side note, makes sense. You know, Jill, as we know, is the master of unlocking. And one assumes, conversely, the master of locking.
You'd have to be, right? If you're one, you just can't not be good at the other
thing. You would think so. Though, that may seem fair. Zombies are masters of killing, but I doubt they're masters of impregnating, despite what the crazy old zombie at the end of the bar claims regarding his younger days before the marriage and the job and all the responsibility.
Back in my day, boy, before I had this limp leg and this non-existent left arm, I was just plowing, babes.
I could sling some green log. Used to just sling it.
He's got it in his hand.
This one right here.
Sling this.
I could sling it.
Just keep drinking, Grandpa. Jill uses this opportunity to search the building for ammo. I just recognize how quickly we come down from laughing because, you know, the narrative of the game, it's very intense. So we're like laughing about nothing. And then it's Jill uses this opportunity to try to live. Jill uses this opportunity to search the building for ammo. The entire police building is a disaster. The officers that remained are now walking corpses that Jill has to put down. All the furniture is overturned, blood coats everything. Jill finally makes it to her old star's office, where she accesses the radio at the dispatch center. A radio transmission comes through from someone named Carlos, who says, "Our platoon is cut off. No survivors found." He asks for someone to respond, but the only radio Jill finds is broken, and so can only receive transmissions, not send them. So a little about Carlos. He is from South America and was at one point an active member of communist guerrilla operations in South America before government forces wiped out his organization. He was then scouted by Umbrella to join their special ops unit, Umbrella's Biohazard Countermeasure Service, or UBCS, due to his skills with vehicle maintenance and heavy weaponry. He was one of 120 men sent to the heart of the disaster zone when the T-virus outbreak hit. At some point, Carlos had to take care of himself when it appeared his company was not going to survive. And I think it's probably at this time we should probably see how this whole recruitment interview went.
Yeah.
All right. So we're looking for some summer help to take care of a pest problem in Raccoon City.
Raccoon City in America?
Yes, sir.
You know, I'm a member of a communist guerrilla outfit, right?
Yes. I can see where that might be confusing. America isn't super psyched at this very moment on defending democracy. There's been some sciency-related oopsies lately that have shifted our priorities.
Oopsies?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Snafus. Blunders, slip-ups, bloopers, bungles, problemas.
No, I know what oopsies means. I meant for you to, like, elaborate on that.
Oh, good. I thought you were an idiot. I told my boss, I said, "I don't know about those people in South America. They seem like idiots." But my boss said, no, they're cool. And then when you didn't know what oopsies meant, I was thinking, well, now I have to confront my boss about him being wrong. And he doesn't like being wrong. And anyway, so right. You want to go live in a city full of flesh-eating zombies?
Sure.
Damn it. So you are an idiot.
Carlos,
you
love him, but he's so, you know, he's so hot and stupid. You mm-hmm. just gotta love him, you know.
He's quirky. He's a bumbling charmer, is what he is.
Absolutely.
After Jill leaves and makes her way further into the precinct, a window crashes in behind her. It's Nemesis again. Jill flees, terrified, and Nemesis once again grunts, "Stars." Carrying a missile launcher in one hand, he chases Jill through hallways while launching missiles at her. She manages to escape the police department and back into Raccoon City. For the time being, Jill thinks she has lost Nemesis. Jill makes her way through the city's claustrophobic back alleys and comes upon the body of a dead Umbrella agent. Jill finds his diary and determines he was part of UBCS, a paramilitary service of Umbrella. Jill happens upon a few more of these deceased soldiers before meeting a new undead creature, this one resembling a giant mutated insect. These are called Drain Deimos, and in addition to looking terrifying, especially compared to the humanoid enemies, they are quite dangerous. Fortunately, a few shots to their soft bellies do them in quickly.
Ooh.
Which is an interesting way to go about it. Usually shooting on the belly is the best way to avoid human life. it's just weird that doing so saves human life here. Travis, you have so much to teach me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just you draw a little target on there with some lipstick and practice, and eventually you'll get real good at it.
I'm guessing practice is pretty much the same as, like, the game.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, anyway.
You could do a dry run. It hurts.
Once back on the street and adjacent to a construction site, Jill hears more gunfire. She runs toward it to find a man defending himself from zombies before running into a nearby restaurant. Jill locates him hiding in the restaurant's kitchen. He says, "Calm down, lady, I'm no zombie," before introducing himself as Carlos, a corporal of UBCS. Jill introduces herself before saying, "Did you just say you belong to Umbrella's army?" She clearly cannot fathom that someone from Umbrella would care about anyone's safety. He tells her they were sent in to help protect the civilians in the city, but their mission went all to hell as soon as they landed. Ooh. Just at that moment, their conversation is cut short when Nemesis bursts through the restaurant's back door.
You guys got a shitter in here?
Nemesis charges toward them, and at that moment, Jill takes notice of a gas leak in the kitchen. As Carlos and Jill duck down behind the counter, they wait for Nemesis to go near the pipes. As soon as he does, Jill pops up from behind the counter and tosses an oil lamp on the ground near Nemesis. It catches, and an explosion rips through the restaurant, launching Nemesis against the wall, rendering him unconscious. Jill and Carlos are safe behind the counter, but Carlos is appalled at Jill's brazen actions.
Yeah. That was against protocol, ma'am.
I'm Jill Valentine, guy. I had to act quick before you took the lead. That Nemesis was to be mine.
Be mine? Like, because of your last name and, like, the holiday?
I'd love to have a conversation, sweetheart, but we've got to get out of here.
They're called conversation hearts. Not conversation sweethearts.
You're just jealous.
That's not even a pun on the holiday part of your name.
Aw.
They run outside through the back where Jill stops and demands answers from Carlos. Why is he there? What's going on? He claims to be part of a rescue mission. Jill fires back angrily that Umbrella started this mess to begin with. Carlos insists that he's just a hired hand, a mercenary, and has nothing to do with what caused the destruction. At that moment, a loud noise echoes from inside the restaurant. Presumably, Nemesis is now waking from being knocked out by the explosion. Carlos tells her to think about joining him and then runs off. Jill hastily follows before Nemesis bursts out of the door they were just standing near. The monster follows her.
You would think if you propositioned someone to join you, you might, you know, stick around for a second, see if they would. And also, it adds a little levity to the narrative. If every time we mention Nemesis bursting on the scene, you think of him as Kramer sliding in and yelling, "Jerry!" But instead, he's just saying, "Stars!
Stars!"
Yeah. He's a terrible impressionist who confuses like Seinfeld's diabolical Newman character with Kramer's entrance. So he's like,
I can also do Donald Duck.
Oh, I'm Donald Duck.
That sounds like an old lady doing a Mickey Mouse. That's weird.
Yeah, it is. Whoa, you nailed it. Good. Jill makes her way through the debris-filled streets, weaving through demolished structures and immobilized vehicles before arriving at the offices of the Raccoon Press, the local newspaper agency, which coincidentally went under, I think, long before the zombie invasion. And reporting on a zombie invasion is just the type of thing that could have saved the press.
Ah.
It's sad in a way.
Yeah.
It seems she has lost Nemesis for now, but the building she's in is on fire, so she can't stay long. She's able to find some parts that will help her unlock the gates to City Hall, but she does so right about the time Nemesis returns by dropping down in front of her. Jill escapes back into the streets. Nemesis once again jumps down in her path, presumably from one of the windows of the building she just fled. She's able to dodge him, eventually making her way to the gates of City Hall. Too bad City Hall has been boarded up. She runs to the rear of the building toward the train yard and crosses through a cable car to navigate the wreckage. Suddenly, she finds herself face to face with a large, gray-haired man. She immediately recognizes his uniform as being like Carlos's. He asks why a girl like her is running around this zombie-infested nightmare. She states that she's not just any girl, she's a member of STARS. The man ponders a moment and says, "STARS, the RPD Special Forces Unit?" Then walks away. At that moment, Jill spies an injured Umbrella soldier lying on one of the cable car's benches. Covered in blood and clearly in pain, Jill tends to his injuries while he yells nonsense.
"Ow! My leg is broken!"
"What?"
"My leg! It's broken!"
"Slow down, slow down! You're in shock!"
"My leg
broken!" "Oh, you poor, poor man! Just sputtering nonsense!" "Oh, I'll just put you out of your misery."
"No, no, I'm not crazy! My leg is broken!"
"Your legs are not broken, sir. They are missing."
"Huh?"
"They've been ripped off of your body by what seems to be a tyrannical nemesis of some sort."
What?
Oh boy, now he can't hear me. Oh, I wish Barry was here. He loves mercy killing. Poor guy.
Jill turns away and follows the gray-haired man. Entering the next cable car, she once again runs into Carlos. He asks if she's decided to join them. At that moment, the gray-haired man shoots down this line of thought and asserts Jill cannot be trusted. Carlos makes the point to the gray-haired man, calling him Sarge, that only three members of their forces remain, and one is in the other cable car, hurt. They need her. Sarge obliges, and then goes over their plan, which is to get to the clock tower and give the signal so the rescue chopper can come and save them. Since most of the city is impassable due to fire, their plan is to use the cable car to make their way through the city, which will also shield them from attacks. Before they go anywhere, the cable car needs some repairs. The group of three split up to find parts.
Yes, and I love Sarge because he sounds so serious, but yet I think he's kind of stupid.
Listen, the city is fucked. Fire everywhere. Zombie everywhere. We're all sitting duck. My plan, we take this cable car. Cannot be penetrated. 100% safe. Nothing bad could happen once we're in it and it is moving. One snag, though. It doesn't fucking work. Anyone know how to fix these things? By my estimation, we'll need to scatter out to find shit that look like it would make this thing work. What that is, I have no idea. Just look for shit that look cable car-y. Move!
Yes, sir. I get the sense that Jill's kind of into him. That's how I'm going to play
yeah,
it.
Yeah, whatever think she's you say, sir.
Yeah, yes, sir. This is going to be great.
That Jill, real go-getter. I like her a lot.
I'll get that Zangief-looking mofo. He's the handsome guy.
Want to bring her back to my potato farm. Make her work real hard.
Ew, I don't like potatoes. Is that a deal breaker?
Huge deal breaker. More vodka for me, though, so not too bad.
Jill leaves the train yard and weaves through lumbering zombies before reaching a gas station where she hopes to find part number one, motor oil. Carlos enters behind her. At this moment, a large zombie mob groans from outside. Carlos seizes the opportunity to be a hero and races outside with his machine gun, eager to wipe out as many as he can. Meanwhile, Jill finds oil, but a sudden explosion rocks the building. The room fills with flames. She hastily exits, finding Carlos outside on the ground, slumping against the now burning building. It's not a Disney story you see very often, that charming hero who just sucks at heroing. I want to see it, though, but Jill kneels beside Carlos's body, believing him dead. Seconds later, he awakens and tells her he's not dead, and hey, I'm not dead. The awakens part, I think Jill should recognize as not being dead, but he opens his eyes and she's still like, are you dead?
It's like that previous interaction she had with the guy with the broken legs.
That's true, yeah. Are those what they call the death whispers, the death gasps, when fully coherent sentences come out of their mouth?
Your death rattle is very articulate.
Yeah, the death rattle. Sorry, I couldn't think of what it's called. I missed that day in medical school. Jill kneels beside Carlos's body, believing him dead. Seconds later, he awakes and tells her he's not dead, and he quips that being a hero is hard work. As they walk away, the gas station explodes, launching them outward. After a short recovery, Carlos leaves, telling Jill he's off to find more equipment.
God, he's such a dweeb.
Yeah, he is. Oh, you know what? Instead of building a cable car, let's build a model of a molecule. I even have some clay left over from when I made my Klingon mask.
I like he has a similar transformation as Barry. Like, he grew up as just just a huge nerd, and at some point,
you're right,
he got bullied into being just hardened.
I should have added some braces there so he didn't sound quite like Jill. I have a feeling there's kind of some overlap there, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Instead of building a cable car, let's build a molecule, like a model of a molecule. Huh? How about a molecule? And I even have some clay left over from when I made my Klingon mask.
Oh, man. I can hear him say molecule all day.
Jill then traverses a large section of the city, fending off zombies along the way, often by shooting them square in the head to drop them. She also comes across more of the giant insect-like Drain Deimos while searching for more engine parts. At some point, she ducks into a building and immediately hears a man scream, "Wait, wait!" before a gunshot rings out. She runs to the scene to find the umbrella sergeant from the cable car hovering over his now-dead comrade. Sarge defends killing his comrade, claiming that the man would have soon turned into a zombie. Jill asks if the man was still conscious when he was shot. The sergeant responds that the man was as good as dead and was easier to kill now than later. I don't think that's quite how it went down. I think it's more like,
So, Sarge, right?
That's it? Yeah.
I'm sorry, why'd I do your voice? Sorry, do that. My bad.
Sarge, I appreciate you trying to meet me halfway here. That's very nice of you. Fuck. You're very emotionally intelligent. He's Sarge. Okay. Sarge, it's Sarge, right? It's Sarge?
It is, yes.
Yeah, are you sure he was going to die?
Yeah. He kept saying strange things like, ooh, I am not zombie, and don't shoot me. Just crazy stuff, you know. Stuff a zombie would say, my friend.
So he was able to form, full words.
Well, yeah, I feel like you're trying to trap me, my friend.
No, I just noticed there's no bite marks on the corpse and no blood other than from the bullet hole that's now obviously fresh and in his head.
That's because a zombie shot him. Yes.
A zombie shot him?
A bullet had zombie residue on it, so it infected him, and I had to shoot him before he turned to zombie.
That's not how the virus spreads.
You're starting to have that rock-solid logic that only soon-to-be zombies like my dear friend here had. Eat lead, zombie, my friend!
No! Jill reluctantly accepts the sergeant's claim that he killed his comrade to prevent the man from becoming a zombie. She leaves to find the additive for the oil the cable car needs to operate. From another room, she hears Nikolai, the sergeant, scream as though something is attacking them. When she comes back in the room, he and the man he shot are both gone.
Ooh.
Fighting her way through a now massive horde of zombies, she runs into, guess who?
Barry?
Nope.
Oh.
Try again.
Vickers?
No, it's Nemesis.
Oh, son of a bitch.
I wasn't going to give you a third choice because I knew you'd get it. He swings at her, but misses, bursting a pipe. Water and steam erupts from the broken pipe. Jill escapes through a gate on the other side. Zombified dogs burst out of windows, and lurching zombies close in on her from all directions. With some deft maneuvering, she finally reaches the front of City Hall again.
You can't see this after Jill flees the area, but Nemesis stands by the pipe for a few seconds holding his hand. He's like, ah! Oh, fuck, that hurt! Oh, Jesus!
Lady, you dropped your scarf! I will chase her indefinitely!
Jill continues back toward the cable cars. Suddenly, from a distance, she hears the familiar and fear-inducing stars, which the player and Jill both recognize as the precursor to another Nemesis meeting. The haunting call is followed shortly by an explosion that wipes out two nearby zombies, and we see that Nemesis is now firing on Jill with his bazooka from atop an adjacent building. She ducks into a nearby parking garage, but she's not safe for long. A tremor opens a giant sinkhole beneath her. She falls, but manages to grip an edge with her hand. She's left dangling over the newly formed abyss. She lifts herself out and escapes, but not before falling into another sinkhole, this time landing in a culvert. Bursting through a brick wall is a giant worm with four fangs protruding from its mouth. Jill shoots its one large blinking eye, causing it to retract back to where it came. She finds a ladder back out and hurriedly climbs it.
I like to think the worm is unrelated to all the zombie stuff. He was just chilling down in his worm lair, playing FIFA, smoking a bowl, but then heard Nemesis' bazooka go off and his entire worm lair started shaking, like his living room. Like worm living room shake. I don't know what's in a worm living room, but like old pictures of his worm relatives fly off the wall. So startled, he wriggles his way all the way up to the surface to see what's up. And he met Jill at the front door, who shoots him in the eye. Now he's like, what the shit? It's a raid! And runs and scurries back down to hide his wormweed. Poor fella. I feel bad for him.
I feel bad for him, too. Do you think he's playing FIFA because he's just he's principally opposed to playing Earthworm Jim? That's not a real representation. We don't use our own bodies for whips. Back on the street, Jill hears more gunfire. She runs toward it to find Mikhail, still injured, kneeling on the ground. Remember, this is the guy she treated on the bench in the cable car, just to make sure we're all caught up here. He has just wiped out a giant horde of zombies with his assault rifle. Jill scolds him for leaving the cable car, but he dismisses her concern. Just because he's wounded doesn't mean he can't still fight. For some reason, Jill brings up that zombies are innocent victims as well. Seems like the wrong time, Jill. But Mikhail doesn't bite and insists that he doesn't feel any responsibility for what Umbrella did here. He's a hired gun, after all, and a soldier, not a part of the lab or the company. Jill accepts this and helps Mikhail back to the cable car.
After Jill endures Mikhail's incessant whining about feeling useless due to his injury, she returns her focus to the cable car. Carlos walks in, and Jill tells Carlos that Nikolai won't be joining them. Carlos accepts the news and then offers to test the cable car, and success!
Yeah, man. I don't know how these people can just make things work in games. We talked about the bomb, making the bomb before. Mm-hmm, she knew exactly how much bomb to make. Here, they knew exactly what would make... They've probably never even ridden a cable car, but they knew what it needed. I just imagine when, like, Carlos is like,
all right, so I have all the nondescript cable car parts here that we found. I'll just open this hatch, shove these right down in here. Okay, Jill, if you could just stomp a few of those stragglers right down in there.
Okay.
Yeah, great. Did you bring the banana peel?
Yeah, I thought it was weird, but I do have it here.
Okay, drop that right in there.
Okay.
Good, okay. What about the Marlboro Lights?
I only found half a pack of lightly chewed Newports. Is that okay?
That should do. You want one for yourself?
Oh, no, thanks. I don't smoke. It's gross.
You should. It's, like, really good for you. Okay, let me just put these right down in here like that, okay? Pull that lever for me, and be sure you spit on the clutch first.
Okay.
Yeah, like that. Oh, wait, booyah, baby. Got it working.
That was incredible, Carlos.
Whoa.
I like how Carlos doesn't seem like the kind of guy who would use the term nondescript, but he does, and that makes it really funny.
Got these nondescript.
Nondescript car.
That was his word of the day 3 days ago. He just latched onto it.
He seems like the type who would like read the word of the day and like totally not pronounce it right.
Yeah.
Nondescript. he doesn't realize there's a pronunciation on there too. He's like, two words of the day. Whoa, nondescript and nondescript. Whoa, two words. But the celebration doesn't last long. A jolt causes the cable car to rock unexpectedly. Jill runs through the car to investigate. She finds Mikhail no longer on the bench, but leaning against the wall where the impact of the cable car movement had flung him. Then Nemesis drops through the ceiling of the cable car, yells, "Stars!" and lumbers toward the Stars agent. Mikhail stands and fires his assault weapon, yelling for Jill to escape. He unloads on the creature as it advances until the click of an empty magazine signals the loss of all hope. The unfazed Nemesis swings at Mikhail, hitting him in the face and knocking his head against the cable car so hard the glass fractures. The now dually injured Mikhail slumps to the floor, but somehow isn't unconscious. He tries to reach for his gun, but Nemesis ain't having it.
Mm-mm.
The monster grabs and flings Mikhail across the car. As Nemesis approaches Mikhail, now lying on his back and staring up in fear, or anticipation, I don't know what he's doing down there, gruesome tentacles appear from behind Nemesis like serpents poised to strike. Mikhail takes a grenade from his belt, pulls the pin, but doesn't throw. He holds it, a heroic suicide. The ensuing explosion destroys the car, kills Mikhail, damages the brakes on the train, and launches Nemesis onto the tracks.
Damn! Gotta respect Mikhail, though. He's like, if this game wants me dead so bad, I mean, fine. Jesus.
Man, I want those fourth wall breaks, those Hideo Kojima fourth wall breaks in every game ever, and this would be a perfect time for it. The train is now zooming uncontrollably fast down the tracks. Carlos, realizing there's no brakes, panics. Jill pulls the emergency brake, but the car continues on, wiping out cars wrecked on the tracks along the way before eventually derailing and hitting a wall, thus stopping completely. Jill apparently blacks out from the impact and wakes up outside the cable car wreckage, lucky to be alive. She realizes she's in the courtyard of the St. Michael Clock Tower, which is where they needed to go to launch the signal for the rescue chopper, according to Nikolai's plan. That's very convenient. Yeah, it's like the hand of God. And I can imagine God, you're welcome. Gosh, people just don't have any manners these days. At least you can do is pray thanks to me. Come on. Because that's very convenient that they
it
landed
true.
Right there. That's amazing.
They are going to a Saints clock tower. I mean,
that's right.
There's
they're
going
to have to do, what do they do? Hail Marys? Some of those?
I think. I didn't do that of kind of research.
Once inside the ornate gothic clock tower, a small horde of zombies crashes through the windows. Jill dispatches them and continues to find her way through the lavishly furnished building in the dark. Upon entering the library, she's greeted by an assault rifle wielding man who she quickly determines to be Carlos. They agree they need to stick together. Finally, Jill posits that maybe they can rest now, believing Nemesis to be either dead or at least far away from them. Carlos tells her there's no rest for the... Wait, you do it. Carlos tells her there's...
no rest for the wicked.
Before walking away.
Man, I love that in these Resident Evil games, it is just a serious trope that they always say they're going to stick together and immediately depart. It's like almost the writers are now laughing at us when they say that. They're like, yeah, like we're going to let you stick together. Like Carlos is like,
look, we have got to stick together. This ain't going to be like the last Resident Evil or even the one you're in, Jill.
I agree. God, it's so nice to meet a like-minded individual. Barry, he kept abandoning me after I told him we should stick together.
Right on. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Well, there's no rest for the wicked, dude. Peace out.
Wait, what the fuck? Wait, where'd you go? That guy is a mysterious individual.
Peace out.
It's interesting. When I do see those kind of things, I notice that too. They're always kind of splitting apart and everything. And from a gameplay perspective, it makes sense, right? Because otherwise you have to program mechanics that involve two characters, or you have to program AI and everything. So you have to find these stupid artificial ways of separating people. Whereas in like traditional storytelling and narrative, you always want to find people you want to find reasons to get people trapped in a room or trapped together for some reason, because that's where all the good stuff comes
right
out. So it's weird that games have like so often just completely abandoned that, which I guess is probably one of the main differences between like traditional narrative and video games. But they'll get married someday. They will.
I mean, even here, they kind of ran out of good excuses to separate them. They're like, we should stick together. Okay, how do we write that they're splitting up? I don't know. Just make Carlos bail. I'm like, that's good. We haven't done that one yet. We can do that once.
Yeah, only once. 6 hours later. Meanwhile, outside at the burning cable wreckage, a horde of zombies, this one on fire, shambles nearby. Now being overrun by zombies and the giant insect-like Drain Deimos, Jill is once again on the move. She finds more Umbrella mercenaries and discovers one of them with a copy of the UBCS's mission plan that states they are to rescue Umbrella employees only. She arrives at the bell tower only to discover the ringer is dismantled. So she circles back to check the storeroom for the pieces she needs. She makes her way to the upper balcony and suddenly from a door on the other end appears Nemesis, still alive.
Hi.
Thinking fast, Jill uses one of the searchlights on the tower to blind the monster. As he covers his face, she shoves him off the side of the tower. He plummets to the ground. Dang, poor Nemesis just can't catch a break.
Hey, lady, you're so fast and frankly kind of rude. I think you dropped your scarf and I just wanted to return. Oh, God, that's so bright. Oh, what are you, a train? No!
Once in the storeroom, she finds what she needs for the bell and makes her way back to it, repairs it, and gets it to ring. And this one I believe a little bit more than the cable car. That seems like a bell is easier to manufacture, a bell ringer.
Yeah, I feel like I can look at a bell and be like, that needs two parts.
I want to see a really like crazy Rube Goldberg-esque bell. Like, there's just all these crazy contraptions and levers and stuff, and still they'd fix it just as easily.
We need to find the goat for the bell. Where do they keep it?
Huh, there's a goat room. There's a bell room. Oh, wait, no, there's a room that says goat and bell. Okay, let's go to that one. Once in the storeroom, she finds what she needs for the bell and makes her way back to it, repairs it, and gets it to ring. The extraction chopper appears and Jill waves it down, relieved that she's so soon to be safe. But she is, of course, wrong. A missile flies in and strikes the chopper, causing it to explode into a shower of debris. Jill looks up to see Nemesis with his missile launcher jump down toward her to finish her off. He takes a swing and misses, but eventually shoots one of his sharp tentacles into her shoulder, causing her to stagger and bleed. She immediately becomes shaky and ill. She has the T-virus.
Oh, man. And for those at home keeping count, that's the 46th chopper to crash in the city. 46.
That's like the Bermuda Triangle of choppers. Weak and not feeling well, Jill attempts to flee, but the area is blocked off by wreckage, which hasn't stopped her before.
No.
I think it's more blocked off by memory limitations of the game. Come on,
yeah,
come on,
I mean,
Jill, duh.
She's just going to find a bomb. She'll figure it out.
Yeah. She'll navigate through. Are there cable cars in that wreckage? Because I can get through those. But nope, she's trapped. Carlos arrives and unloads on the creature, causing Nemesis's missile launcher to explode. They both continue to fire at Nemesis with every bit of ammo they have until it staggers into the flames of the burning chopper wreckage and falls. Jill slumps to the ground, passing out. Jill is unconscious for 2 days. During this time, Resident Evil 2, and therefore the entirety of our second episode, takes place. Here's where Leon Kennedy and Claire Redfield wind up in Raccoon City and then have to find their own escape.
Yay! We finished Resident Evil 2. Good story, Caleb. Let's wrap it up. Oh, wait, this is Resident Evil 3, isn't it? Son of a bitch.
Dang it!
2 days later.
Jill wakes up in the chapel of the clock tower just after midnight on October 1st. Remember, the events of this episode began on September 28th. Resident Evil 2 takes place on September 29th and 30th, as we just said. Carlos has been watching over Jill and tells her the chapel is safe. She asks him if she's been infected, but he doesn't respond. She's not in pain, but she does worry that not feeling pain means she's infected with the T-virus. Carlos promises to kill her if she turns, but insists he will find a way to prevent that from happening. He leaves her in the chapel and makes his way toward the hospital.
My God, Carlos, please tell me. Tell me I don't have the virus.
Dude, you don't have the virus.
It's not very convincing. Are you just saying that because I told you to say it?
Mostly, yeah.
Well, I don't feel any pain. Do you think that means I'm okay? Or is the virus inside of me blocking the pain?
Dude, how would I fucking know? But listen, Jill, seriously, listen. If you so much as even pretend to be a zombie, or even say the word zombie, if you move in a sudden way that like maybe startles me, I promise I will blow your face off. I mean it, okay, Jill?
Thanks, Carlos. Hey, you really are one of the good ones. I appreciate that. You'll never turn on me.
As you might expect, the hospital is riddled with zombies, and key areas of the hospital are locked down with steel shutters. In the lobby, a zombie lurches toward Carlos, but before he can shoot it, something decapitates the zombie from behind. The creature looks like a bipedal reptile, and it screams at Carlos. It's a hunter. A creature that would be all too familiar to Jill Valentine. Carlos unloads on the creature, killing it, and then continues through the hospital toward the office of the head doctor. Carlos takes a private elevator in the head doctor's office to the fourth floor, bypassing more hunters and zombies en route the file room. Here, he runs into his comrade Nikolai, the sergeant from before. Is it Nikolai? Yeah, it is. Okay, damn it. That's how American I am. I know the two Russian names, and I can't keep them straight. He runs into his comrade Nikolai, the sergeant from before. He's standing over a dead UBCS member who appears to have been recently shot. When Carlos questions him about what just happened, Nikolai responds that
he is one of the supervisors. That is all you need to know.
And then points his gun at Carlos's face.
Here is my gun in your face.
Standard Nikolai, you charming devil. Before he can shoot, the man on the floor that Nikolai had just shot pulls the pin on his grenade. Carlos and Nikolai recognize the noise and run for cover, with Nikolai flying out the fourth floor window from the blast.
Oh my God, if you watch the clip of this, I love it so much. The speed that Nikolai shoots out of this window is so crazy. You see the man pull the pin. Nikolai and Carlos turn to look at him. They're like, what the fuck? Immediately turn to run down the hallway because they know it's bad. They're trying to run away from him. Carlos takes a quick left to dodge the blast, but Nikolai is just a bit behind him. So when the blast hits, it shows Carlos safely duck away. But in the background, you watch Nikolai fly out of that window like Nolan Ryan fucking pitched him through it. And I watched that probably 50 times. It is amazing. I mean, even on primitive PS1 standards, just a bunch of blocky polygons, the comedy in all of that is so good.
Did it make like a slide whistle sound, like a boo?
I wish it did. You kind of see Carlos kind of like duck around the corner and he looks all safe, but then behind him there's just this wisping blur that just bounces out of the window. It's so fucking, it's the best thing.
That's awesome.
You can tell it's a person, but like you can see like kind of a leg and an arm. Like he's so contorted too. It's so good. It's so good.
Carlos continues to search. He calls an elevator to take him to the basement where he finds another umbrella laboratory. Oh, damn it, laboratory. Have I been saying laboratory this whole time? I'm such an idiot. Here are two giant incubation tanks full of liquid containing terrifyingly large frog-like creatures, likely just deadlier versions of the hunters our heroes have already faced. Carlos finds some instructions in the lab and uses those to develop the vaccine for Jill. He takes the vaccine and flees the hospital to go back to the clock tower, but on his way out, he sees a time bomb mounted to the wall on the ground floor. The bomb is beeping, and the explosion seems imminent. So Carlos sprints away from the hospital seconds before the entire building explodes into rubble. Back at the clock tower, snake-like eels now cover the floor of the entrance. In the main hall, something bangs from above, wanting in. Parts of the marble ceiling chip away before a giant tentacle-covered creature crashes in. Its nemesis, lacking his trademark coat, allowing his tentacles to flail freely. Nemesis has little interest in Carlos and instead moves toward Jill, so Carlos leverages this disinterest to fire upon the creature, barely preventing the creature from reaching Jill. I, for one, am proud of Nemesis, you know, for getting rid of that coat and really kind of revealing himself a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it probably took a little bit. I imagine it's, you know, there's a photographer try coaxing him out of it, saying, you know, you can do this, Nemesis, something like, these photos are going to be great, really great work, Nemesis. But look, I'm really going to need you to remove your coat for a few shots.
I don't wanna.
Look, Nemzy. Can I call you Nemzy? Look, Nemzy. I don't know why you are so shy. You've got a great body.
Really?
Yes. Oh, yes. You're a brooding hulk of a man. Those calves. I can just tell, even with the coat on, that those things, they just pulse. And that chest, it wants to come out, Nemzy. It yearns to come out. It's saying to me, please, let me free. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I think I can.
I want to shine, it says. I want to break some hearts, it says, huh?
Okay, I'll do it.
Good. I mean, it's not like you have disgusting tentacle things under there, right? Give me a smile.
Huh? What's that?
Carlos gives Jill the vaccine, who then wakes up immediately. He tells her about Nemesis and the betrayal of Nikolai. They wonder about what Nikolai is after before Carlos leaves, promising to meet up with her later. Damn it, Carlos. Jill exits the chapel, and Nemesis chases after her before she's able to lose him at the Raccoon City Park. Jill handles the park's zombie infestation easily with her shotgun and makes her way to the graveyard, where she searches a tool shed for tools and ammo. Here, behind an unassuming brick wall, she spots what might be a secret entrance. Thinking it can be a safe haven, she bursts through to find an abandoned umbrella command center. Documents are scattered around everywhere, but one document, written by an unnamed supervisor, mentions the creature that is chasing her and refers to it by its name, Nemesis. Umbrella sent the creature to kill the surviving STARS members.
Wow. You know, they say it's named Nemesis, but that wasn't their first choice, of course. Somewhere, you know, there's some scientists that were talking about names, and one guy was just really caught up on one. He's like,
This is my specimen, and we'll call him Gary.
Gary? No way.
Well, I've always called him Gary. His name is Gary. Well,
why not something cool, though? I mean, it's a murder machine. Why not Behemoth or Murderface or Nemesis?
Fine. But when we're alone, I'm still calling him Gary. Ain't that right, Gare Bear?
That's right, scientist guy. We're a couple. They need to
deal with it.
Jill leaves the command center and finds Nikolai waiting for her at the hidden entrance. Not very hidden, is it? Mm. He tells her he's impressed with how she's able to stay alive this long, and she sarcastically retorts that he appears to have done a good job of keeping himself alive as well. Jill, you saucy vixen. He tells her that he had no intention of helping because he is actually there to evaluate the effect of the zombies and the T-virus and collect live data from the subjects, not to save any survivors. Suddenly, the ground quakes, and Nikolai, fearing another mutant, flees. Jill does the same. The ground in the cemetery opens up, and Jill falls through as the giant worm from the sewer has returned.
Ah, poor guy. He's still thrashing around looking for his weed. He's all blind. She shot him. He's looking for his weed.
Yeah, that's true. He's blind, even without the weed thing. He's blind. Like, of course he's going to be thrashing around. Like,
yeah.
Come on, Jill. Don't be a jerk.
Jeez, man.
It chases her through the gouges of the fallen earth. She unleashes a number of grenades and a barrage of bullets before it dies. She climbs out of the sinkhole and fights through the zombie-infested park. She finds more undead UBCS militants, one of which is clutching some papers. They are orders that confirm what Nikolai claimed earlier about the nature of their mission, which included destroying the hospital and all data stored inside of it. Umbrella appears to be covering its tracks, and thanks to Nikolai, many of the survivors are being killed. Jill finds a path that leads to a wooden bridge. As she makes her way across the bridge, spiky tentacles, those sound familiar, shoot up between the slats. As she backs away, the tentacles continue to strike between the slats, getting closer to her. But as she turns to flee, Nemesis jumps onto the bridge and grabs at Jill, who reflexively pushes him off the bridge and into the river below.
I mean, at some point, you have to kind of see Nemesis as a pretty shitty assassin.
So this... I'm going to go ahead and say Nemesis.
Gary.
Gary, he's a near-perfect assassin, you say?
Razor-sharp tentacles, extreme strength, towering figure, unwavering intelligence, a bazooka. Need I say more?
Why is he running around in traffic right now, screaming?
Oh, I forgot to put the eyes in. Shit.
That explains why he's interested in you, science guy number one. Boom! Got him.
Sorry, Gare Bear! Come back! Come back up here for your eyes! Gare!
I picture the scientist of having like a bag of eyes. He's like, and he just, I got him right here! I mean, I can just put him in.
Gare, come here!
Yeah.
Do you want to be a blue-eyed monster? Or...
You're my little brown-eyed monster, aren't you, Gare Bear?
Yeah, you're definitely a brown-eyed monster.
Yeah, I'm your brown-eyed monster.
She continues running along the bridge and into the factory at the other end. Upon entering the facility, she's greeted with a barrage of bullets that clang off the walls next to her. She rolls out of the way in time to see a door to the radio room close at the other end of the hall. Jill thinks it's Nikolai and calls for him. But whoever it is has locked himself in.
Gonna sum that one up to another case of violent Resident Evil diarrhea. Anytime you see a character and they run away and lock a door, they're pooping. Every time.
Diarrhea.
How many times have we seen it? I mean, come on.
It happens all the time. I mean, yeah, we may be looking into things a little bit, but in our headcanon, it's happening all the time.
Oh, yeah.
She continues to fight her way through the infested facility until eventually reaching a sewer area where she must wade through knee-deep water, which, of course, means knee-deep diarrhea. Slowly, several zombies rise out of the water and surround her, forcing her to back up against a wall. As she fires at them in a futile effort to survive, machine gun fire rings out, and all the zombies fall. They're ducking for cover, right? That's what I'm supposed to interpret. It's Carlos! After the zombies are all dead, Carlos tosses his gun on his shoulder and says to Jill that rescuing her has become a full-time job. He then reveals that Umbrella is going to launch a missile toward Raccoon City at dawn. Only hours from now, he tells her they need to split up to find an escape, but to watch out for Nikolai.
Split up to find an escape. I mean, they have no way to communicate. How does splitting up to find an escape make any sense? This doesn't make any sense at all.
No, it's cool, Jill. We'll find two escapes. There'll be one for you and one for me.
Must be what he thinks.
It must be. Like, if I know, hey, I know, Carlos, if I find an escape, I'll bring it to you. And if you find an escape, you can bring it to me.
Whoa. That's so smart, Jill.
I know, thanks. Back on her own, Jill finds her way to a power station in the facility where she's once again greeted with bullets clanging off walls nearby. She knows it's Nikolai. He talks to her behind cover and tells her that he has made sure that none of the other survivors survived. So they're not survivors anymore. Therefore, being the only one to possess the knowledge of what really happened in Raccoon City, he will have more bargaining power when it comes to discussing his bonus.
Not sure how that's going to work. I think he has no grounds for a bonus if there's nothing fucking left.
That's true. Yeah.
I know what really happened in Raccoon City. Oh, really, what? It doesn't matter what.
It doesn't
it's
matter.
It's gone.
No, boss, they have like 8 more of these games coming. So, like, there's something still there, and I know what it is. So,
but the next one's a prequel, Nikolai.
Shut up. Jill tells him that killing her wouldn't help him, since she's not on their payroll. But he asserts that Umbrella wants her dead and that there's a monetary reward at stake. Suddenly, there's a loud noise and a scream from Nikolai's location, and the camera shows his feet lift and begin dangling above the floor. His screaming soon stops. Jill peeks around the corner only to find a pool of blood where Nikolai once stood. Through the hole in the ceiling above, Jill can see Nikolai's mauled corpse. What about your bonus now, Nikolai?
I said boner, not bonus.
I don't remember the exact exchange, but I don't know how that makes it better. Yeah. No, I'm the one who's going to get the best boner at work. I'm
going to negotiate a better boner.
Yeah. I'm going to go to my boss, and I'm going to say, you give me better boner, okay? Or I'm out. I will walk if you don't. Frightened, Jill flees the area, only to end up in the factory's dark waste management center. The doors lock behind her. An automated voice announces that the room will expel all contents in 4 minutes. This game really is about diarrhea.
Yeah.
We can assume whatever that entails will be fatal to Jill. Suddenly, the lights come back on, and Nemesis's familiar gravelly voice says, "Stars," just before Nemesis jumps down into the room. He leaps over to Jill and swipes, but she's able to duck out of the way, causing Nemesis to knock a pipe off the wall. It's apparently not a water pipe, as the spewing toxic contents corrode Nemesis's tentacles in a second. And that, in the video game development world, is what we call a clue. Yeah, they planted that seed a little earlier, remember, with the steam and the...
Right, good point.
Nemesis soon recovers and chases Jill, who smartly positions herself near another pipe that she shoots when he nears, causing more acid to spew onto the slow-moving beast. Burning alive, Nemesis lets out a scream and falls, this time not getting up. The countdown is still going, but the floor beneath her quakes, causing something to fall from the corpse of a nearby Umbrella scientist. Jill walks over to it and sees it's a key card to unlock the doors to the trash facility she's trapped inside of. Jill makes her way out just as the countdown ends and the floor opens up to drop all the contents, including Nemesis's body, into the bubbling toxic waste pool below.
Ew.
It's a good thing that what fell from the corpse is relevant. I mean, I imagine Jill wasting precious seconds only to find like a beer bottle opener keychain or the dead scientist's home garage door opener or something.
She's like, it fell at the right moment. It must work.
What if it was a garage door opener and she's just trying to jam that into the lock? Like, come on. This is called serendipity. It exists. Now, a new countdown has started. As Jill makes it out of the trash facility alive, the speakers in the factory return, announcing that a missile attack has been detected. Jill needs to get to the communications tower so she can let someone know she's alive. Once finally inside the communications tower, she can hear Carlos already trying to communicate with her.
Hey!
He's just wasting precious time just saying he's pleased with the sound of his own voice through the speaker. Like, that's all it is.
He's just holding the button in, nothing can come back through.
Hey! Whoa! Hey! Hey!
hey, this is me talking. I am talking. Hello, hello. This. It's because I can hear it in my own ear. It's really, I never hear what my voice sounds like. I sound cool.
He tells her that a chopper is on the way, but that they don't have much time. He also tells her to bring a piece of equipment from the communications tower that can track incoming missiles and their distances. That convenient piece of equipment. She exits the tower and finds most of her routes to Carlos are blocked off by debris, so she cuts through a scrapyard.
She shouldn't get excited. 3 games in and we know by now, a fucking helicopter doesn't stay in the air for more than a minute in Raccoon City. Like, Carlos tells her a chopper's coming, she should just drop her knees and scream, why? Why a chopper? Send one of the eagles from Lord of the Rings.
Just put like an Iron Maiden on some wheels and send that my way. Come on, that's way safer.
Chopper's just a coffin with a weird hat.
Yeah, it's an eventual coffin. That's all,
that's all it is.
The scrapyard is apparently a front for Umbrella's landing zone. Crushed cars and dead U.S. Special Forces soldiers litter the area outside the factory's power room. There's a document on the ground beside one of the deceased soldiers with a photograph attached of a new weapon referred to as Paracelsus's sword, which the documentation indicates can be used to fight the bioweapons created by Umbrella. It's a rail cannon and looks big enough to wipe out most anything. Jill enters the adjacent power room. An explosion from outside causes the door to crash in on itself, rendering it unable to be reopened. There are several piles of dead Mr. X units. I hope the whole body, not just the unit. Heaps of them scattered around. She spots the rail cannon on the other side of the room, but it needs some batteries attached to it before it can operate. Once she gets the first battery firmly in position, she hears a dripping sound of water behind her. She turns, wary of chemicals that could be in the area, and spots the corpse of Nemesis as it falls through a hole in the ceiling and squirms toward her. It has managed to survive the toxic dump, and its now mutating legs appear more dog-like. It spews liquid toxins at Jill.
Are we to believe they keep toxic, sludge-filled, hot and bubbling mass of liquid trash juice above the power station? Which, by the way, I'm certain that's where Raccoon City stores all the unused diarrhea. Or are we to believe that Nemesis's limbless turd of a corpse wriggled its way to her from somewhere else? I don't know. How does it keep ending up here, but now it came here without legs? I don't know how it got here.
My favorite part is that by you saying unused diarrhea, I'm forced to, like, try to think of, like, the manufacturing purpose of diarrhea. Like, this is the diarrhea we don't use, but stuff we do use. Here's our line of fine products.
I kind of imagine that the developers of the game had, like, a massive diarrhea to work with, and they kept sending characters out with diarrhea, and they're like, we had a lot of leftover diarrhea that we didn't. Carlos can only leave so many times inexplicably. So they just had this vat of diarrhea that he felt. That was my line of thinking. It's not a good line of thinking. That was my line of thinking.
I like the concept of a vat of diarrhea. You know, makes sense. Diarrhea, notably the easiest of all feces to flush, is instead very, like, obtrusively not being flushed. We keep it in a vat. There's a drain at the bottom of the vat. Yeah, we're not going to open that.
There's
we
a big a one vat. Labeled sour cream, and then the one beside of it says diarrhea. You got to be careful.
You really got to be careful. Frantically, Jill defends herself with gunfire while trying to connect the remaining batteries. You know what, you handle this.
Paracelsus's
sword takes some time to charge up, so Jill has to continually engage Nemesis. Damn it, that's also one of those possessive plurals. Nemesis's new form, which appears more menacing but is less aggressive. Tired of fighting Jill, it turns and limps to the other side of the room where the monster feasts on another tyrant's remains, which it puts conveniently in the crosshairs of the rail cannon. The ensuing blast shakes the room and creates a giant hole in the steel wall, decimating the corpse of the already dead tyrant. Nemesis still wriggles with life. Jill approaches with a magnum she picked up from a nearby dead soldier. Now standing over the monster's writhing corpse, Jill fires. You want stars? I'll give you stars. Jars. Pop, 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 beep, boop. Bang, 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 pew. Nemesis finally stops moving.
She couldn't have thought that would work. I mean, you explode him in a kitchen. That was 4 days ago. Push him off a building. You pushed him off a bridge. He scalded himself on hot pipes multiple times. He fell into toxic sludge and lost all of his limbs. He got hit by a railgun twice. And she just finds some uneaten gun lettuce on the ground and shoots him once with it. I want to see the story like this in the end where like the hero has a really good line as they think they've killed the bad guy, but they just hold a cringe face for a second expecting it could get back up any second. She'd be like, "You want stars? I'll give you stars. Pop, pop, pop." Right? Hey. Did you get starsed? Huh? Poke, poke. Poke.
Oh, wait. Oh, what's that under him? Is that my scarf? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
What a nice monster.
I was just misunderstood.
Jill exits the power room and takes the elevator up to the helipad to find Carlos standing at the helicopter. He motions her over as if she can't see or hear the friggin' helicopter.
Come over here. It's a hat.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, Jill, come over here. Look, it's a helicopter that's on and loud. Can you hear me over it?
To be fair, though, I mean, she should be wary of it. I mean, maybe that's she's true. Like, "That's it's not blown up, so chances are that's like a paper helicopter. That's like a fake dummy helicopter, scene dressing for this whole thing."
Yeah, I like that she sees the helicopter and just runs the other way, and he has to go get her. She's like, "I'm not getting in it. There's no way."
Act four of the game is just like a Benny Hill, like
trying to convince Jill to get the helicopter. Oh, that'd be so good.
He keeps throwing like random like machine parts that like could lure her in there like bait. So he's like, "Come on, there's some cables. I know you like cables. Go get them." And he gives a stick, like he has the helicopter like propped up and then like a stick with a string tied to it. So like he doesn't know how the door in the helicopter works. It's just going to fall on her eventually. Anyway.
Her scarf's under it.
Yeah, go get it. So she climbs in the chopper and it takes flight. She thanks the pilot for saving her life. And he says,
"Couldn't let you die. Are you ready to finish this?"
Oh my goodness. Jill is surprised by who the pilot is, just as a missile is seen detonating the city. It's Barry, in case you couldn't tell. I know it kind of sounded like it was Carlos or maybe Sarge at the beginning.
But you can't, yeah, who knows? All of my voices are the same thing.
The wake of the explosion levels every structure for miles. Every house, every building, the clock tower, all of it.
Every building. And the clock tower as well.
And the clock tower. Which is also a building, I'm just now learning.
Whoa.
God, bury the lead. A ginormous mushroom cloud takes to the sky as the helicopter barely escapes the massive inferno. Jill says simply, "That's it. Umbrella's going down." The game ends with a news telecast that confirms the president executed the plans to wipe Raccoon City off the map in order to stop the spread of the coronavirus, damn it, T-virus, over to stop the spread of the T-virus. Over 100,000 casualties are estimated.
I wonder if the president literally just wanted them to just erase it off a map.
Sir, we just issued the plans. We executed it. The missiles have landed. Raccoon City is no more.
So you erased it. You erased it off that map. I didn't like it on that map. The font was weird, and it was kind of covering up my vacation stead a little bit north. Ah, the map. Well, oh boy!
If there were any other maps in Raccoon City, I can assure you that those have been dealt with. Good. So, like, how does the story of Resident Evil do you think measure up in the canon of Resident Evil stories?
Three. It's a little different. The whole wrinkle of having Nemesis chase you around adds a little more tension than you had in the other ones. So anyway, that's kind of neat. Other than that, though, it doesn't feel that different really from another Resident Evil game. You're more out in the city a little bit more. So the previous two were kind of had you claustrophobic. This is, I mean, not really any more open, but there's more areas to explore. So that it kind of has that going for it, I guess. In general, I like it, but it doesn't have the iconic bits that I think one and two have. And that could just be because it's three, less people played it, and people maybe wanted to beat one and two and thought they would try to do that before they played three and never did, so they never played it, because that was me for a long time. Mm-hmm. I don't dislike it. What do you think?
Pretty much the same as you, actually. I think claustrophobic was the great word there. It doesn't feel as claustrophobic as the others, which because of that, it does miss some of the horror, the horror kernel that I guess that makes up the Resident Evil games. And you can definitely tell this was the developer saying, we have the potential to make this a giant series. Let's make sure we plant a lot of things that can be explored in a lot of different ways. And when you start doing that, when you start planting too many seeds and sort of cultivating too many seeds all at once, it can get very confusing. And so I think from a narrative standpoint, this one is more confusing to me than some of the others. Although the other, they're all absurd and crazy, but in the reality of the games themselves, you know, Resident Evil 1 is pretty simple, easy to believe, streamlined, straightforward. 2 is, I would say, pretty much the same. This is the one where it feels like it's starting to get a little bit unwieldy. And they don't really call that back until, I would say, probably even as far as Resident Evil 7, honestly.
Yeah, like,
that's
yeah.
when it finally comes back to not just its horror roots, but also its just singular aim, cohesive story roots as well. So for that reason, I don't like it nearly as much as the other ones, but it's still fun.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of a transformation, really, in the whole series, canonically, and just the chronology that they made the games in. And that they're nuking Raccoon City because it felt like they were done with it. They're like, mm-hmm. okay, this is the end of our story. And it was so big, obviously, people wanted more, and so they had to do more. But after you go through all of this and the story, I mean, if it had ended with this game and it ended with the nuclearization of Raccoon City, I think it would have been a great trilogy by itself. But because mm-hmm. it had to keep going, it had to keep jumping the shark. I mean, we've already blew up a city, so now everything after this has to you know, go beyond that. And so I think that was kind of a misstep. And we'll talk about when we get to 4 and 5 and 6, what that's like, because those are definitely not anywhere near as believable or relatable as the ones we just talked about.
Yeah.
And they're not as good to me. They're not as fun for me narratively or just play wise because of that. But yeah, it does feel like this was purposefully supposed to be an end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's true or not. We should have looked into it because we're speaking as experts on it. But there's tons more games to go. But this felt like they were really trying to wrap up this story.
Yeah, it's interesting as you talk about that. I'm recognizing just how absurd the American title of Resident Evil is now that as you get beyond the resident, a mansion, like a residence, and you're talking about an entire city is destroyed. Like basically you've destroyed an entire city, which is made up of multiple residences. Nothing can be a Resident Evil anymore until you get back to 7. Like there's no like single home like for it to be scary. So
exactly. Good point.
Yeah.
So just a reminder, Resident Evil 0 is the next game that we'll tackle. And then we're going to take a break from Resident Evil entirely. Ending with Resident Evil 0, we'll complete our first 4-part series so we can finally actually release an episode. So by the time you hear this, it's out. But as we're speaking about this, we've decided, okay, we're going to do 4 Resident Evil games, release those, do another series, and then eventually come back to Resident Evil, hopefully after Resident Evil 8 comes out, because I think it's being teased right now as of here in early March. So hopefully we'll get a hold of that and play through it and be able to wrap up another series of Resident Evil games, which I'm really excited for. All right, so that wraps up our tale of Resident Evil 3. Thank you so much for listening to this riveting and well-read tale. Thank you, Caleb.
You're welcome.
Check out Resident Evil 0, the next and last episode of this opening 4-part series. Visit polykill.com for more shows like this one. Check out better stories than the one you just heard by heading over to calebjross.com. He writes books, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Big shout out to Brad Sucks, an amazing musician who graciously donated one of his popular tracks to our podcast. You heard it at the beginning, and you'll hear it again at the end. You can find us all on Twitter at Polykill. I'm at Trav Plays Games.
And I am at Caleb J. Ross.
And the tale has been told.